Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Listen to my story about a man named Khan, a rich mountain lawyer, and now he's simply gone. They found his ankle bracelet on I-75, and now he is wanted by the FBI. Fraud, that is. $500 million. Social Security. Well, first thing you know, old Khan's a fugitive. Gotta leave East Kentucky and find a place to live. They said maybe Cuba is where you ought to be, but no one knows where he is actually. Maybe he's sitting on top of his billboard, waiting for the coast to clear. Now we kindly ask you folks to keep a close lookout. You can make some money if you know his whereabouts. But if you try and show this man some hospitality, you'll get a heaping helping of legal jeopardy. Aiding and abetting, that is. Don't let him sit a spell. Y'all call the FBI now. You hear?
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Can't Get Enough of Eric Khan show. We are still amazingly interested in Eric Khan, who is still a fugitive from justice after defrauding Social Security due to his disability cases. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and I want to welcome to the show my co-medical hosts and music critics from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And from the IT section of the University of Kentucky, the Interim Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips, to tell you how to complain about that song on our website, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you didn't really give us a chance to respond about that song. Did you have fun recording that? And what do you do in your free time?
You know, it was just, honestly, one morning I woke up and I thought, I need to write a song. And so it was like 5 o'clock in the morning. I got up and I tried to write it down before I forgot it. It was a dream. It was a dream, really.
Shelly, I know you want to say something.
Was it in color?
Or it could have been a nightmare. You can take either one of those.
There's so many questions about that song, but I think we'll get into that later. For now, we're going to talk about how to hear all the audio except that song on the Moorhead State Public Radio website, wmky.org. That's right. Find Health Matters. You'll see a list of the shows. You'll see a link to the audio of the shows. Listen to them over and over. Sign up for the podcast. Have Health Matters delivered to you automatically. Go ahead and look at some of the other shows on that website. Moorhead State's got some good shows, but, you know, make sure you find your way to Health Matters first because, you know, we do want to make sure that, you know, our pages hit more than all the other pages, right? Tony just couldn't live with himself. Which show would bother you the most if they beat you?
I think this show is going to go viral after that amazing musical rendition.
You know, the funny thing is Shelley and I actually haven't heard the song with I guess there's some music behind it. We just heard you in the studio doing it like a cappella, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Okay. Thanks for your vote of support.
So we assure you that that audio is not on the Moorhead State Public Radio website. But if you did hear that and you want to comment on it, Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. That's where you interact with us. That's our fan page on Facebook. Leave us messages. Leave us comments. Leave us feedback. Suggest show topics. Post. Give us some interesting news, or maybe there's something you just have a question with. We hope it's not Grandma's Alzheimer's. We'd rather talk about, like, research in Alzheimer's, but certainly the Facebook page is there for you to interact with our show. And, again, you can find that at Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor, Face Savers. If you want to save face, save your face.
How can we save our voice?
Avoid the humiliation of facial trauma by taking some common sense steps to protect your face. This was an article that caught my attention in the AMA Journal of Plastic Surgery. It was published June 15th. From January 2011 to December 2015, a period of 4 years, people they looked at, the researchers looked at people over age 55 who sustained a facial fracture from recreational activity. You did something that broke your face. There were 20,000 and change emergency room visits over that period for recreational associated facial fractures among adults 55 years of age or older. The incidents increased 45% from 2011 through 2015. Let me say again, the incidence of facial fractures increased 45%. Bicycling was far and away the number one cause of facial fractures. I want to support bicycling. It is really good for the knee joint. It is excellent aerobic activity. When I was young, or when I was in college, I had a pretty significant bike wreck. Didn't hurt, did not put me in the hospital or anything, but scared me. And I have noticed how so many of my friends who bike regularly have had accidents. I assume that having an accident, having a some type of a broken bone is a part of cycling. And in this case, it was 26% of all facial fractures were from bicycle accidents. Team sports came in second at 15%. Team sports, baseball, softball, number one and two. Golf, actually, was the third most common cause of facial fractures among sports.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can imagine. You take a golf ball.
Well, but how often does somebody hit somebody in the face with a golf ball? I mean,
or a club.
Well, that's a good point, Shelley. I hadn't thought about slinging clubs, but that can happen. Well, you would, based on watching TV, I would assume, I've seen bicycle wrecks on TV. Rarely do you see people get hit by golf balls on TV.
Well, they're spectators.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you do see occasional, but usually it's not in the face.
Right. But usually those are professional golfers who know where they're hitting the ball.
Right. So I'm just saying, it just seems like I wouldn't think that number would be exceptionally high. But, hey, okay, whatever. Outdoor, you're the boss.
Outdoor activities, 10% of facial fractures. Gardening, 9.5%. Facial fracture while gardening.
I didn't know that was a contact sport.
I don't know. I really wanted to find out how this happened, but I don't have anything on that. Walking and jogging, and I assume those are due to falls, 5.5% of fractures, and that was more in the older age group than in the younger people. Greater proportion of men than women have bicycle-associated fractures. It's 35% versus around 15%. So you are almost twice as likely if you were a man to get a facial fracture on a bicycle as if you were a woman. And I'm trying to be nice here. There are many competitive women cyclists. The people I know in Moorhead, Rowan County, that go racing around these back roads at very high speeds are all men. And so I can understand how men get those facial fractures. We'll have more about facial fractures in our second fractional portion, but that is our sponsor, the Face Savers. If you want to save face, save your face. Now, our update on Eric Kahn. June 2nd, he removed his electronic monitor and fled from his home. There is a $20,000 reward for information leading to his arrest from the FBI. As of the time we recorded this show, he is still at large. The Washington Times on June 18th said, he apparently has been sending letters to them and several news outlets in Kentucky and West Virginia describing his escape, his reasons for going on the lam, and chiding authorities for trying to sniff out his location. He has said that he feels he is being unfairly prosecuted, that there were other people every bit as involved as he was, and yet he seems to be the one that they're going to throw the book at, and that's one of the reasons he ran away, apparently. On June 19th, they questioned his family members and his business associates because they feel someone is helping him out. On that day, the mother of his daughter told prosecutors he took a car from her in Floyd County. Still believed in the United States. They don't think he has made it offshore yet, but he is somewhere, and he is occasionally talking to the FBI or talking to news outlets on Facebook. That's what we know about Eric Kahn. I find this guy has apparently, with $500 million, this is the largest Social Security disability fraud in history. He has...
doesn't it make sense that it would happen here, though? Or at least in this region? Because, I mean, it's such a prevalent payer.
Kentucky has the nation's number one rate of disability.
Which makes you wonder, you know, that's how it goes. It could have went unnoticed for as long as it did, right?
Yeah, essentially he paid a judge to decide the cases favorably. So he was doing very well in terms of getting disability for his.
At least that's the allegations.
That's the allegations. You're correct.
But you have to wonder, the flight in him kind of suggests that either he thinks he won't get a fair trial or he kind of agrees with the assessment.
This is not a I eagerly await my day in court kind of statement.
No, here. Yeah, it doesn't seem to, he doesn't seem to be wanting that.
No, he doesn't seem to be wanting much of any attention right now. But he supposedly has a lot of offshore money, but whether he can get to it or not is still to be determined, I guess. And as best everybody knows, he is still in the United States, apparently being aided by some unknown people in his efforts.
So if he hears that song you sang, do you think that will make him turn himself in? I mean, it's entirely possible, Tony. You could get $20,000 out of this.
I like to think of it that he's now been memorialized in song. He's sort of a folk hero. I mean, he robs from the taxpayers and gives to himself. It's a classic Robin
Hood. It's a reverse Robin Hood.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a reverse Robin Hood.
Something like that. I don't know. I got time for one bit of science, and I want to go back to
my guess is you can squeeze two things in.
We'll do our best to see what we can do.
Now, see, I just cost you 10 more seconds.
I know. This was in Sleep Medicine, and it was published in June. I believe it was June 12th. A rapid letter to the editor. This was a strange story. I just felt like we had to talk about it. 59-year-old man. He presented to his doctor with a drooping eyelid, and they ran a CAT scan and found that he had a lymphoid tumor. He had a lymphoma there affecting his eye. They did radiation treatments to the tumor, and he received 18 radiation treatments to that eye over a period of 4 weeks. He noticed while he was getting the radiation treatments, he started dreaming in color. He had very rapid, vivid, full-color dreams, and he'd always dreamed in black and white. Now, the idea of people dreaming in black and white was attributed to the fact that many of us grew up with black and white TV. Apparently, younger people are more likely to dream in color. We were just used to images being in color. I never thought that TV would affect you, the color of your dreams, but that's the theory. Do you know if you dream in color?
I don't know.
Do we care?
I really don't know, Rick. Honestly, you caught me off guard with that one. It would be just a thing to observe. It's like if you're right-handed or left-handed, or if
don't you think, like, then if that's the case, if you're dreaming about a sunrise or a sunflower or something that's very colorful, don't you think that would kind of ruin it all if it wasn't in color?
Whatever it is, I have not thought. Interacted with my dreams.
Clearly.
Wait a second. I have not interacted with my dreams and said, darn it, I sure bet this is pretty if it were only in color. Nor have I said, well, I guess we're still in Kansas in a dream. I don't remember any of that stuff.
Haven't you ever watched The Wizard of Oz? I mean, that dream goes color on you.
Yeah it does. Mm-hmm. After you leave Kansas. Kansas is not in color. Kansas is black and white.
Well, it depends on where Oz is. They don't really tell.
Okay. So he'd only
it's over the rainbow, but where's
previously.
The rainbow?
Now, so the big thing is, then apparently the radiation treatment somehow triggered him to dream in color, which is interesting. But he mentioned the dreams. And here, there were three dreams he had. And this is a 59, this guy's my age, he's 59 years old. One, he visualized algebra questions and their answers on a board in 3D. He didn't do algebra at school, so he didn't know if the answers were right or not. Which, okay. Have you ever dreamt about 3D algebra equations? Not me. I would say that.
Secondly, is he sure they were algebra?
Yeah, if he didn't do algebra. Apparently they were something, and he wasn't sure. Secondly, he counted and recounted the cars he had owned. This guy sounds like a real winner. And then third, which I really like, is he dreamed of identifying fish of different species. He had the old fish identification dream that we all have all the time.
The question is did he dream about how many seconds he had before he had to stop talking? Because,
sorry.
Tony, time is running out on you.
I know it is. But listen, why don't you in the audience, why don't you take a dream?
Collect yourself,
take a
please.
Break, dream of identifying fish of different species. And come back for our second fractional portion. We'll try to pull it together. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Can't Get Enough of Eric Kahn Show. We continue to be amazed by the Eastern Kentucky lawyer who has been indicted for disability fraud.
So and I guess you didn't convince the radio station to use your song as bumper music. I guess they just heard banjos.
Well, you know, these sort of parodies used to be on radio stations. They would be played regularly.
Back now, when they were funny?
Now that just hurts. You know, that just hurts. But at any rate, you know, they...
Actually, it was pretty funny, I have to admit.
I was
again.
With
we
it.
Didn't hear the music.
Yeah,
we just heard
I think
you.
The words yeah. all lined up. I was. This was my dream. Apparently, he dreams of identifying fish. I dream of writing songs.
No,
writing
no.
lyrics, well, different lyrics to songs.
You came up with the words, so you must have actually wrote the song. You didn't just dream of it. You wrote it.
I awoke from a sound sleep saying, "I need to write this song," and it came out. It was one of the, it was like Handel's Messiah. You know, it was just one of those things where I just exhausted myself writing this thing.
Tomorrow night, in your dream, you're going to paint the Mona Lisa.
and identify fish. Don't forget that. I will be identifying fish tomorrow night in my dreams. Our sponsor for the second time, the Face Savers. If you want to save face, save your face. And reminding you, facial trauma rates, according to this study that was in the journal, the AMA Journal of Facial and Plastic Surgery, for people over age 55, the rates have increased 45.3%. Since 2011. The problem is, as we get older, we are trying to be more active. And unfortunately, we're trying to be more active with older reflexes, older sense of balance, and so forth. And we are much more likely to simply plant our face on the concrete than we were when we were younger. It is a great thing for old people to be active. You see all the commercials. You're supposed to be out there surfing and doing wonderful and hiking and doing all these wonderful things as an older person. They don't talk about the facial fractures. Just a reminder again, the rates increased by 45% from 2011 through 2015. Bicycling at 26.6% was the single leading cause of facial fractures. Team sports came in second at 15%. Outdoor activities, 10%, just various outdoor activities. Gardening, 9.5%. were the most common causes. Walking and jogging, 5.5% of fractures, and that was mainly in older people. More women than men sustain fractures associated with gardening. Apparently men can avoid the dangers of the garden better than women. I think mainly by avoiding the garden.
Well, I was just saying, I think they're classified as a different injury for guys.
Yeah.
The tractor runs over, you know. There's something different about the
categorization. Yeah, that's not recreational when you get run over by your ATV. That's not recreational. They didn't even mention ATVs, as a matter of fact. Gym exercises, more women than men. Men had a greater likelihood and women of actually getting a fracture, an orbital fracture, that is the bones around the eyeball. Walking and jogging and gardening were, as we mentioned, a greater proportion of injuries in older people. As long as we continue to encourage greater activities in old people, then I think we're going to see this. And, you know, honestly, we haven't really thought through the safety part. We've talked about the fact that if you get a knee replacement or if you go on arthritis medicines, you're more likely to fall. Because they are the things that get you up out of the chair, get you out of bed. This is a good thing, but unfortunately, we seem to be not too steady with it. Our sponsor, the Face Savers, if you want to save face, please save your face. I wish we had, in our third fractional portion, some common tips to help you save your face. Eat potatoes and die. That's the title of this from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, June 13th.
Even if they're not deep fried?
If they're not deep fried, you're actually okay, according to this. This was they took the Osteoarthritis Initiative cohort study. That was they just had 4,400 people who had filled out a bunch of questionnaires about arthritis. They were 45 to 79 years old at baseline, and they followed them for 8 years. And one of the questions these people answered was, how many potatoes did you eat, fried and unfried potatoes? You could have less than one time per month eating potatoes, 2 to 3 times per month, one time per week, 2 times per week, or greater than 3 times per week you eat potatoes. And then they figured out who died. Now, the interesting thing to me for this, as we look at these studies, there were 4,400 people between ages 45 and 79. They followed them for 8 years. The average age was 61, and they lost 236 people. That is not very many people to die over 8 years when the average age was in the 60s. But they died. Participants with the highest intake of potatoes did not have an increased risk of death. Those who consume fried potatoes 2 to 3 times per week were twice as likely to die. Over 3 times a week were 2.25 times as likely to die. The intake of unfried potatoes was not related to increased mortality, according to them. Now, this is one of those classic studies, and, you know, Shelley, you and I were talking about this before the show. When we talk about these type of things, eating fried potatoes, we think, well, then what we should do is just outlaw fried potatoes or tax fried potatoes. The problem is eating fried potatoes may be a surrogate for something else. We know that if you commute to work by bicycle, you have a longer life expectancy. It may be that riding a bicycle to work does that, or it may be that being wealthy enough to be only a bicycle ride away from work may do that. Most of the people in our area would not think of riding a bicycle to work.
They or being that health conscious that you're going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's all kinds of factors.
So if you, again, the difference between people who eat potatoes and people who eat fried potatoes may be more along income level, socioeconomic level, educational level, and so forth. If you, the classic thing, if you want fries with that, you're probably eating in a place where either you didn't have enough time to pick a good restaurant or due to financial or other constraints, you're not able to get to a restaurant that serves good food. So in my mind, and I apologize to those of you who love fries and feel that that's very good food, but I'm not sure that the potatoes are causing the problem. I am not in any way endorsing French fries, but it is very hard to tease out the information of whether French fries are killing people or whether a lifestyle that includes eating at fast food restaurants is, in fact, the deadly thing.
And then also sodium and sugar, you know, if you have a lot of ketchup with the potatoes, if you're putting a lot of salt on them, you know, that's another factor as well.
That is true.
What are you eating with the fries?
So you, if you fry the potatoes but didn't put any salt on them.
I don't know.
I have problems, you know, when you isolate one thing like that and you can't really. Now, they tried to adjust for this. They tried to adjust for income and so forth. But I just think there is something fundamentally different about a person who goes for fries and a person who doesn't. I really think there is more than just simply you can't just simply outlaw fries and expect them to have this kind of a benefit.
Yeah, because people will switch to tater tots. Right.
Well, and after all, they're the big fries or the crinkle fries. You know, when you if you want to talk fries, let's get specific here. Mm-hmm. What constitutes a fry and what is a potato wedge?
A nice big steak fry.
For instance, a potato. Well, is that a potato wedge or a fry?
I don't know. It's a quarter of a potato.
Yeah, and I think that's a potato wedge. And I don't know whether I assume. I mean, you don't fry whole potatoes.
Well, and then where do potato chips fall?
On the floor, mainly. Mostly, you know, in my lap.
They're fried.
Yeah, they
fried
are.
Fried potatoes.
Yeah. So, but at any rate, that's all we know about that. I thought it was interesting because you hear so much about potatoes. And of course, potatoes, first of all, are nutrient-rich in one way, but they're also high-carb. And so a lot of people, are my wife included, are avoiding potatoes. And since my wife avoids potatoes, I don't eat very many potatoes myself anymore because that's
you're
the way
pansy.
It is.
You're a pansy. You're scared. Have a potato.
You think I'm afraid of potatoes? You think I'm afraid of potatoes?
No.
No,
I think you're afraid of who's serving the potatoes.
I'm afraid of my wife. I'm not even going to answer that. She
tell
might
her,
do
Francis,
something.
We're eating potatoes tonight. I dare you. I double dog dare
you. Put my foot
you.
Down and say, we're eating French fries tonight.
Come on, Tony. You can do it.
No. I value my
be
life.
A man.
You're right.
Step
you're
up.
Absolutely, no.
Have some potatoes.
You're absolutely right. Let's keep going with the food, okay? This was this came from Public Library of Science Medicine. It was published June 16th, and it looked at U.S. policies that might promote healthy eating and how good would they be. If you enacted all four of these policies, they think that you could prevent 230,000 cardiovascular-related deaths by 2030. Now, you start pushing things out to 2030, and it makes it hard to know these numbers, but there it is, 230,000. Cardiovascular disease-related deaths by 2030, according to a study in Public Library of Science Medicine published June 16th. There are four policies. The first policy would be a national media campaign to increase fruit and vegetable consumption, showing, I suppose, attractive people eating fruits and vegetables and showing the French fry people having car crashes and not being able to make the elevator or whatever. You know, they're not as free. You think of those perfume commercials. That's, I think, what we're talking about here. You know, you suddenly hear a voice that no one else hears. You leave the press conference because you're going to go eat fruits and vegetables. It could happen. The second thing, which has already been enacted in several municipalities, is a 10% tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. I'd like this one. It's clean. It's at the absolute worst case, it's revenue neutral. And it's probably going to increase some revenues, which you could use for some of these other things. The third one is a national policy to subsidize fruits and vegetables to reduce their prices by 10%. Try to get fruits and vegetables down to the point where they are competitive from a cost standpoint with junk food.
Still won't work. It's harder to eat.
You know, until they get individually wrapped vegetables. Let's face it, you can pull a candy bar out and unwrap it and eat it right then.
The easiest fruit, what's the easiest fruit to eat?
Apple.
What do you do with the core? You're in your car. You're eating an apple. What do you do with the core?
I wrap it
it's
in a napkin and I save it until...
Oh, so you have a napkin ready for you in the car.
Yeah. I get it from the fast food place where I got the potatoes.
I'm just saying.
You pin me down. Right. Yeah,
no, I'm saying really. I'm trying to bring up a real... I mean, because you know, you're talking to a guy who commutes 2 hours a day, right?
Yeah.
And I tried to... I mean, I gained weight because I junk fooded it up, but then I started going to fruit. But, you know, fruit is just as hard to eat in the car. Either you have to take the time to prepare the grapes and put them in a bag, or you have to figure out what to do with the banana peel, or you got to figure out what to do with the apple core, or you got to figure out what to do with the top of the strawberry, or you have to prepare it all ahead of time. I mean, the problem is that stuff, you can't buy processed fruit that's easy to eat that the processing hasn't killed the nutritional value of it.
I really struggle with this. Honestly, vegetables are tough. I agree with you.
And, you know, I mean, yeah, you can take a carrot or a piece of celery or something like that, but my gosh, I want to be happy driving down the road.
Yeah. They mentioned a targeted policy to subsidize fruits and vegetables to reduce prices by 30% among individuals enrolled in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. So this would be targeting a lower-income population and trying to drop the prices even more. Now, the by far and away, the best policy of the four was to reduce fruits and vegetable prices by 10%, according to their modeling. Despite Rick's point, which, Rick, I completely agree with, it is so difficult to transport, to prepare,
not insurance,
and to clean
so,
up after.
I'm saying, but it only has to be slightly more difficult for us to get tired and not do it.
When you're talking about behavior, small things, an extra step, an extra requirement or resource needed is enough to make a change.
You have to prep it. You have to go to the store more often if you're going to have fresh fruits and vegetables. Who has time to go to the store two or three times a week?
You've got to fight your way through and eat vegetables. That's all I can say.
But, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, maybe it's a preservative problem. Maybe there's no way to process and prepare it and preserve it in a way that it's easy to eat without, again, killing the nutritional value of it. But if somebody figures out how to do that, especially like fast food, you know, they just – you know, McDonald's gives you the apple in a sauce, and you know, you got to take the, you know, they process and everything. I mean, it's just very difficult.
Agree. The if you went targeted for the SNAP enrollees only and dropped it by 30% for them, you would prevent about 35,000. That's the national tax on sugar sweetened beverages. That's about 31,000. So that'd be twice as much if these things work. The media campaign would actually have the least effect. First of all, you'd have a bunch of very attractive young people leaving the press conference to eat vegetables, and nobody would believe it. So it's not worth it.
Hey, Biden, it works for drugs. It does.
Okay, but that's no, no.
She's got you there, bro.
Yeah, there's a point that young people taking drugs has gotten a lot of people to take drugs.
And you prescribe those drugs, and it's not to people that look like the ones in the ads.
Ask your doctor if vegetables are right for you. The researchers found that combining the four policies would have the biggest effect, even though the media campaign didn't seem to do anything, even though Shelley has a good point. The study also led to a less obvious finding that the national tax on sugary drinks might not result in a significant reduction in cardiovascular disease-related deaths. Now, keep in mind, it may reduce our rates of diabetes, it may reduce our rates of obesity and disability due to obesity, but it doesn't appear that it will reduce cardiovascular-related deaths. I would still take that tax on sugar-sweetened beverages. We in Appalachia are the highest consumers of sugar-sweetened beverages, of colas, of soft drinks in the country. And we could sure use a policy that would try to curb that a little bit. It'd help us with our obesity rates, in my opinion, and also our diabetes rates. So just something to think about. If we took that 10% tax on soft drinks and we use that to subsidize fruits and vegetables, then you've got a government that's actually working to try to help the people. Now, some people feel the government should leave you alone. You have your rights here in the United States to drink lethal beverages, eat fried potatoes, and whatever you want. But I could see that if we had more trust in our government, That would be, for me, a win-win doing those two things. All right, from policy then to an entirely different way of doing this. This was the journal Appetite, which I have now developed a fondness for because they have really strange articles. This was June 20th, the journal Appetite. We know in poor neighborhoods, community gardeners present a larger supply of healthy food, particularly fruit and vegetables, than non-gardeners. So what if we made everyone a gardener? So they analyzed community gardens from the viewpoint of production, economics, and nutrition. These were women with access to a community garden plot in a poor neighborhood of Marseille in France. 21 gardeners recruited for the study, so this is a very, very small study. 21 gardeners. Only 11 of them actually harvested during the 1 month they did this study. This was not a nationally sponsored and financed year-long study or anything like that. The majority of the gardeners exhibited a preference to diversity, taste, and healthiness of produce over quantity. So rather than getting rows and rows of corn, they would plant different vegetables in their plot. The only significant difference between the food supplies of gardener and non-gardener households was fruits and vegetables, and the difference was due to larger purchases of fruits and vegetables. If you had a garden, you wouldn't necessarily make enough fruits and vegetables to make a difference, but you would go ahead and buy fruits and vegetables because you are now a fruit and vegetable person since you're a gardener.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we get people out of the house. We get them to raising things with their own hands, and they say, you know, this is ugly. It's got appeal. I'm going to have trouble disposing of it, but by golly, I'm going to take this in the car with me.
So brainwashing works.
Well, I think you got to give people a chance. When you raise your own fruits and vegetables, all of a sudden you see the power of fruits and vegetables. You know, if all of your stuff just comes from the grocery store and you never actually get your hands dirty, then you don't appreciate it as much.
What do you think? How much do you grow at home?
Apples. We've got an apple orchard. And I will tell you, I am a religious person, you know that, but if you want to believe in God, look up into an apple tree and see an entire tree full of food. It is – why would that happen? You know, that makes no sense.
No symbolism there with the apple and the Adam and Eve and all that.
No,
I guess none of that really
– no, I don't have to work out the details. I just look up there, and this tree is full of delicious food. And I think, why in the world is there a tree growing? And I didn't do a thing. I put a little fertilizer out in the spring, pruned a couple of branches, and I have a tree full of food.
You're a lover of the forbidden fruit.
I like apples.
Really?
Yeah, and I
not as much as your horse. I bet your horse loves apples.
My horse, we have to fence him out of the apple orchard. So far, we haven't had to fence me out of the apple orchard, so I guess you're right. I can go through the gate, and I seem to be able to control myself. But I do, when I'm mowing the pasture field, I'll go over and get me some apples, and I'll just eat apples. And
what kind of apples are they?
They are golden delicious. We're not diverse. I mean, this whole variety of stuff and all that, we got some nice big trees that give us some good apples, and we're happy.
Okay. Mr. Fruit Eater.
Is that an insult? Because
no.
You call me a potato eater. I mean, you're just kind of slinging these things. I'm proud of you.
I want to know what you do with the cores when you're done. When you're mowing, you throw them in the yard. I know what you do.
That's pretty easy. So far, we haven't had any trees sprout, but you keep hoping. Just throw them in the right spot. Eventually something good will happen.
Maybe, you'll grow more trees.
Yeah, mine are organic, meaning I don't have time to spray them with stuff.
Eastern Kentucky organic.
Yeah, that's right. So I fight the deer and the birds and so forth, and I wind up with a few leftover apples.
Well, you do get the strongest, right? I mean, the strongest have to be the strongest to survive in yours.
Yeah, that's true. These are good apples, and they're about halfway up the tree because the deer get the lower ones and the birds get the upper ones. So I'm right there in the middle, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Do you need a ladder to get them?
Yeah.
Do you keep ladder like handy, or do you just like jump up on the tractor and ride by and grab one?
No, I keep a step ladder handy.
Oh, that ought to get us off the air.
That's right. All my life I've had a step ladder because I never knew my real ladder. We're going to take a break and bring back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Can't Get Enough of Eric Kahn Show.
I'm glad you finally stopped laughing.
Sorry.
That is not the way to end the segment.
Just gets me every time. Our sponsor for the final time, the Face Savers, reminding you, if you want to save face, then save your face. And we've been talking about this article from the AMA Journal of Facial and Plastic Surgery. It was published on June 15th, published online. And it looked at people who are age 55 years or older who sustained a facial fracture between 2011 and 2015. There were 20,000 emergency room visits for facial fractures associated with recreational activity among adults 55 years of age or older. And you would think at 55, you kind of get the stupid stuff out. The hold my beer and watch this, you hope ends somewhere in the mid-50s. But these people, the average age was actually 66, they were still falling and breaking their face. The rate increased by 45%, bicycling with 26.6% of all facial fractures, by far the most easy way to break your face recreationally. Team sports, baseball and softball, that were the two big ones. They were around 15%. Golf added another 1 to 2%, because if you get hit by a golf ball, you're probably going to break something. More men than women sustained the bicycle activities. Women were more likely to sustain gardening activities and sustain a facial fracture at the gym. And they talked about the role of osteoporosis. We think about hip fractures. We think about fractures of the spine. We call those compression fractures. But a facial fracture from a blow to the face that might have, when you were younger, just stunned you, now becomes a facial fracture. The outcomes from facial fractures are not good. This is a major, because your smelling, your thinking, your vision, your ability to eat all depend upon having an intact face. This can cause a great deal of disability. Now, the question becomes, and this is the frustrating part of reading this article, the question becomes, what do we do about it? Well, we should treat osteoporosis. We know that, especially in older women. It is much more likely that they are going to be osteoporotic, so they need to be screened. And we need to make sure that we all have adequate intake of calcium, and we are also fond of vitamin D with the calcium for that. Now, you could say, well, gee, if you play golf, you should wear a helmet and goggles, because a golf ball is rock hard, and you never know when somebody's going to hit one in your direction. I think playing golf with a helmet and goggles is not going to win over any converts.
No, not really.
Yeah. And you could say be careful, but that's silly. I think certainly one of the things you've got to realize is that your balance is not as good as it once was. That's why there is America's Funniest Home Videos. And so you've got to recognize that on a bicycle or walking or whatever, you can't do those things you used to do when you were young. No one in their 50s or 60s should be dancing on a table under any circumstances. Okay? Let's make that an absolute Health Matters rule.
No table dancing.
No table dancing after age 50. It just
50.
You know, I'm going to say that arbitrarily. But these people were mid-60s and they were still
recreational. When did you quit, Tony?
Now you made me seriously think back. I don't think I've ever danced on a table. I'm not even going to embarrass you by asking. See, I'm just laying myself out there and saying, no, I've never
danced.
You just
ruined my dreams tonight.
Now, I think then being aware of your balance and being aware of your limitations is important. I always thought gardening was really good because generally the dirt's soft, although I had a patient who broke her hip in the garden and apparently
but
facial fractures.
When have you been gardening and not had bags of mulch or bags of soil or pots or plants that are heavy that you're gardening is rough on your back. You're bending over. You're scooting down, you know.
All types of gardening activities. There's some heavy lifting involved. There is twisting and turning and being out of position. That is our sponsor, Face Savers. If you want to save face, save your face. Going to get serious for just a minute here.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Okay, you're on your own.
Americans, no, because I think you might be interested in this, actually. Americans with five or more chronic conditions make up 12% of the population, but account for 41% of total healthcare spending. That's a report from the RAND Corporation, and RAND does a lot of these reports looking at the politics of healthcare and also looking at how we can change our healthcare system. Now, the problem, very simply, is our healthcare system is going broke. We cannot keep up with the amount of money we're spending on healthcare. We have to find some way. And it's not simply let's cut everybody's salaries, let's quit waxing the floors, let's use a cheaper brand of paint or something like that. We're going to have to fundamentally get at where we are spending money. So I'll say it again. Americans with five or more chronic conditions, 12% of the population, 41% of total health care spending. If those trends persist as we all get older, us baby boomers get older, we're going to claim those five conditions or more are going to claim millions of lives, cost trillions of dollars in the United States, and we're going to have to do some preventative efforts. They mention at least 32% of people with five or more chronic conditions visit the emergency room every year at least once. An emergency room visit is over $1,000 on the average now. So, again, you figure one-third of these millions of people that have these five conditions. In 2014, people with five or more chronic conditions filled nearly six times the number of prescriptions that people with two chronic diseases or less did, according to the RAND report. So the total costs are up. The fact that they visit emergency rooms adds to the cost and the number of prescriptions filled. This is one of our biggest problems with our healthcare system. Between 2008 and 2014, the prevalence of multiple conditions was higher among adults ages 65 years of age or older. 81% of them had multiple chronic conditions. People age 45 to 64 had, half of them had chronic conditions. 18 to 44, just 18%. 100 million Americans, multiple chronic conditions, 54 million of them are women, so it's pretty much half and half. The most common chronic conditions, high blood pressure, 27%, high cholesterol, 22%. Mood disorders, 12% was third most common.
Interesting.
And does require medication, does send people to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. Diabetes was in fourth at 10%, anxiety disorders also 10%. Americans with five or more chronic conditions spend 14 times more on health services than people with no chronic conditions. The average Medicare expenditure for a person with five or more conditions is $17,000 and change a year, compared with less than $2,000 for a person with no chronic conditions. So what we have to do, we can certainly keep people alive with chronic health problems by adding medications and adding treatments and adding emergency room visits and so forth. But it would be better, far better, for our healthcare system if we could prevent those conditions. And we're back then again to fruits and vegetables, maintaining a weight and trying to exercise without breaking your face. When you look, though, at trying to figure out how to adjust costs, we're going to have to deal with chronic conditions, and we're also going to have to deal with the last year of life. It is not simply that we Americans need all this health care spending that we're spending. It is that we are spending too much money the last year of life on things that don't help people, and it is also that we allow these conditions to build up, and all of a sudden people are on a dozen different medications for five or more conditions. They're going to the emergency room. They're going to healthcare system. If we can, in fact, try to affect this more on the front end, actually deliver more resources to younger people, then we may be able to prevent or manage these. The other thing we're going to have to do is get used to self-management. I mean, when I'm speaking as a baby boomer, when we baby boomers retire, we will not be able to have this level of healthcare spending for all of us.
But Tony, I mean, all seriousness, it's very difficult for us to even, to use the term management, much less self-management, right? I mean, so that's a bit much to expect people to do, is to self-manage. I don't know. This is going to be a bad problem for us.
It is. Well, it means that we got to change the system. Quite simply, the idea of I'll do anything I want, and then when I get this condition, I will start seeing an individual doctor at an individual office and go to the emergency room when I don't feel well, that's not going to work. We're going to have to find ways to deliver health care outside the doctor's office and earlier and in a more preventative fashion. And that's when you start – when you realize we are suffocating ourselves with these healthcare spendings, that's when you start thinking, well, what would be the loss of freedom associated with a beverage tax or subsidizing vegetables or things like that if we could, in fact, prevent these health conditions, which we are already taxing ourselves with our healthcare system beyond anything we would do with any of those proposals.
But we're a society that's grown to live in the moment, right? I mean, so – there's too many people, I think, right now that want, you know, I mean, you've probably heard it in the younger generation. You always used to hear YOLO, right? You only live once. I think we're going to have a hard time as a society adopting something that requires discipline and of that degree and that magnitude. It means you have to give up the chocolate cake when you're at dinner. I think this is going to get worse before it gets better.
Absolutely. And it may take a crisis to empower us to change our healthcare system, because I don't think there's going to be a planned, organized change where we start pulling back on the amount of money we spend in the last year of life.
I mean,
it just doesn't.
just food alone, we've put so – I mean, there's so much money to be made in things that taste good, right? If we could – if you could somehow – if somebody could somehow or another make money on food that doesn't taste so good, that'd be a thing, right? Because then we wouldn't eat as much.
Well, if we would just start eating at home again. It's one thing, to food that tastes good, but frankly, after you've eaten at some of these restaurants several times a week, it's just that food is really not that tasty. The problem is we don't have time, and many of us don't have the skills to fix our own food and eat at home, to fix food that is enjoyable to eat. It will require a societal change. The way we are going now is not sustainable. We can't afford this, and so we're going to have to make changes. And I think part of it is eating at home. Part of it is developing lifelong exercise and changing the type of food we eat as well, and changing our approach to medical care as well. Boy, we've got a lot of work to do. And I've said this in private. I'll say this on the radio. Neither party can solve our health care problems alone. That's very clear.
It's not a political problem.
Yeah, right. The only workable solution is going to come when people collaborate. And they're, I don't care, you know, you may pine for the days when you had the Democratic solution. You may look forward eagerly to the days when the Republican solution is rolled out. But neither one of those solutions is going to work. I can just tell you, they will not, one party will not solve this problem. And then until the parties start to work together, we will not have a solution to our health care problem. And maybe that crisis, sort of like a war, some type of crisis, will finally empower our legislators to begin working together again. I don't know. I right now I can't see the type of crisis it would. It would seem like they would have already done it if they were going to. I don't know. Next up was a strange report from the journal Circulation. This is the American Heart Association sponsors this journal, and this was published June 5th, but I kind of liked it. It was about young people with these cardioverter defibrillators. This is the thing that Dick Cheney had implanted, right? So they have an abnormal heartbeat, an abnormal heart rhythm, and this thing will shock their heart. It will monitor their heart rhythm, and it will shock their heart into beating regularly again. Those are called implantable cardioverter defibrillators. And until 2015, it was felt that once you got one of those things, there's no way you could play sports. Too dangerous. Makes sense to me. Based on some observational data, they changed their recommendations, and they have said competitive sports may be considered for athletes with these implantable cardioverter defibrillators. And this is a 4-year follow-up of a registry of people that had cardioverter defibrillators implanted and then went ahead and played sports. 440 participants, 393 were in organized sports, 47 were in high-risk sports. They had a bunch of different diagnoses that I won't bore you with. At enrollment, median time of implantation was 26 months. So they enrolled in the registry about 2 years after their implantation. But 126, that's 29% of the subjects, were within 1 year. Most common organized sports were running, basketball, and soccer. The most common dangerous sport was skiing. If you can imagine skiing with a defibrillator implanted, you can see danger abounds with that.
Mm-hmm. You just got to wonder, when they implant a defibrillator in you, shouldn't you kind of have a different viewpoint on life?
Maybe you're so glad to be alive.
I mean, we're not talking about a pacemaker.
No.
We're talking about a defibrillator.
You had to, your heart has to stop essentially pumping blood in order to get that thing in, or you are at such high risk of your heart stopping pumping blood that it is felt that you need to have that put in imminently. The 77 subjects engaged in varsity, junior varsity, or traveling team competition. Those are younger people. 72 post-college athletes participated at national or international level. They followed them for 44 months. Two of them died, but neither death was sports-related. They said 10% of them had appropriate shocks during competition or practice, and more received shocks during competition practice than at rest. About twice as likely to get shocked during competition. Of the 51, here's your answer, Rick. Of the 51 subjects who received shocks during sports, 7 stopped all sports, 13 stopped one or several sports. 5 of these 20 total returned after 6 to 18 months.
I mean, shouldn't you turn to watching sports at that point?
Well, I think getting it implanted certainly is a life-changing event, but then getting shocked while you're trying to do sports, that may be the thing that again, a few of them walked away. The majority of them didn't. I mean, even though they were shocked.
If you watch me play sports, it's shocking.
Rick looks like something's going on with his heart.
But Rick's not being shot.
No, that's just... It's just old Rick. That's how there is.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Sean Delaney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, Health Matters is similar to the prescription drug Propecia.
Health Matters is used to treat male pattern baldness. It should be used by adult men only. It works by decreasing the amount of a natural body hormone called DHT.
DHT is an abbreviation for dihydrotestosterone. In other words, Health Matters can prevent baldness by decreasing the amount of testosterone in your body.
If our show is crushed or broken, it should not be handled by a woman who is pregnant or by a woman who may become pregnant.
You must continue to listen to our show in order to maintain your hair growth. When you stop listening, any gain in hair quantity is lost within 12 months.
Researchers from George Washington University interviewed 54 men under age 40 who had listened to Health Matters. All of them reported problems with sexual function, and some reported neurological problems such as depression and mental fogginess.
You must continue to listen to our show in order to maintain your hair growth. When you stop listening, any gain in hair quantity is lost within 12 months.
Remember that your doctor has prescribed this medication because he or she has judged that the benefit to you is greater than the risk of side effects. Many people using this medication do not have serious side effects.
You must continue to listen to our show in order to maintain your hair growth. When you stop listening, any gain in hair quantity is lost within, you guessed it, 12 months.
That's right. If you want to keep that hair, you got to put up with the side effects. But whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week. Make a healthy change in your life and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.